Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 238, and we're going through James now, in the section where he talks about the law, the necessity to keep the entirety of it, and what happens even if we break just one of them. For the simple reason, God is without spot, without blemish. He wants us to be likewise. And therefore, if we break even one of them, which is obviously a total impossibility, you see, all of us break an awful lot of them, many of them, oftentimes even unaware. Sins of commission, sins of omissions, there are all kinds of sins. Sins that we commit presumptuously, we're not even aware of it. But even if we broke only one, even then, you see, the chain is broken and the death penalty hangs over our head. And so we can never take it too lightly. That's the God that we have, a God of grace, a God of mercy, but an uncompromising God and a very strict God. You see, he cannot allow one spot or one blemish to be on us, in our garments. Otherwise, it's a defect. If you are in the diamond industry and you know about diamonds, well, you look at a glorious, beautiful diamond, no matter how big it is and things like that. You know, the shining diamonds that you have and all shapes, some are, you know, more expensive than others. Then you look inside, and if you see just one single flaw in it, that very expensive diamond becomes not worthless, but worth less, you see, than it would have been if it was perfect. And God does not allow any of that because he would not tolerate sin, period. And so that's what James is saying. Even if you keep the whole law and yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all. Because that's the nature of God. So he can never compromise with his law. And for that reason, Christ said, don't think that I came to destroy the law of the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And even if, he said, in terms of eternity, one jot or one tittle, the tiniest little part of it, whichever is the least one that you may consider to be the least, or that God may consider to be the least, in comparison to the major aspects of the law, none of them, he said, none of them, period, will be done away with until, you see, all things are fulfilled, until all the children of God become spirit beings, divine beings, and then the law is written in their hearts, and then there is no issue of transgression or lawlessness. Until then, we commit even one single sin, and the curse of the law hangs over our head. Well, what is the curse of the law? Well, you sin, you transgress the law, and the wages of sin, you see, is death. That's the curse of the law. It requires a death penalty. Now, there are some big sins that it requires a death penalty, obviously. Little ones, it does not. But in either case, you are not perfect. You have missed the mark. And therefore, you can never play games with the law of God and take it lightly, as some people do. That's a policy that, you know, that's how they function. And we, by nature, function that way. You know, little things, oh, well, it's no big deal. No problem, don't worry about it. Don't get uptight about it, God. It's not necessary for salvation. We decide for him. We can't have that attitude. You see? And that's exactly what James is saying. And he's not saying something different. The Apostle Paul mentioned that too when he spoke to the Galatians in chapter 10. In chapter 3, the book of Galatians, in verse 10. Speaking about obedience, it says, for as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse. You see, in other words, when you obey the law of God, and yet not perfectly, you are under a curse, because no human being can obey the law of God perfectly. And those who are ignorant, who did not understand what the Apostle Paul is talking, as Peter would say, you know, there are all those who are unlearned. You see, they don't understand the manner in which the Apostle Paul writes, because they do not have his background. And they wrestle with his words and statements to their own destruction. And so as they read this statement, they see the curse of the law. And so they say, that means the law is a curse. You see? Well, it has to be a moron to even think that way. And a lot of people are that way. They're not willing to acknowledge it. That's what they are. Spiritually speaking, they're morons in sin. And so they read these kind of things and they conclude in their heart, in spite of all the statements about the law that even Paul himself made, that the law is holy and spiritual. How can it be a curse? The law is good, he said. How can it be a curse? In spite of what Jesus Christ said, the God of Israel, you see, They just brush aside all that. Why? They have an agenda. They are rebellious against the law of God. As Paul himself said, the carnal mind, that's what the kind of people he's talking about, the morons, carnal mind. A carnal-minded person is an enemy of God. He's not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So obviously when it comes to a statement like that, it takes it totally out of context and then goes about to deceive others by telling them, well, the law is a curse, forget all about it, we don't need it. Christ nailed it to the cross. And obviously that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, you break the law, you're under a curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all the things which are written in the book of the law to do them. This is where the curse is, in breaking the law, not in obeying the law. Yet when you have a demonic mind influencing a human being, twisting all things, well, then a human being begins to think like a demon. Then good becomes evil, light becomes darkness, righteousness becomes bad, you know, not good, and so forth, unrighteousness, lawlessness. And that's the kind of people we have on this earth. That's the reason why when they come to Christ at the end of the age, claiming to also be his disciples, his people, when they recognize the fact that the door is shut before them, they were not allowed in, they're going to say, Lord, Lord, you know, we're your people too. You know, we've done all those things in your names. He will tell them, I never knew you. Why? Because you are lawless. You are lying to yourself and lying to others about the law of God, my nature and character, my very mind. That's the only way it can be fully formed in you. That's the reason why I died, so you would stop doing it. You see? And Paul again, when he's quoting this statement, he's quoting Moses, who is quoting Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, who said to him exactly what to say to Israel, as you read in Deuteronomy 27, chapter 27, where God commanded Moses to tell the people, tell the Levites to pronounce those curses upon people if they commit a transgression and iniquity against the law of God, against God. And so he enumerates, beginning with verse 15, verse 14, you can start the story there, and then at the end of the chapter he says, curse is he, or the one, a man, a woman, a child, doesn't make any difference. People make differences. Well, say, oh, he's a minor, he shouldn't be judged as an adult. That's not the law of God. According to the law of God, doesn't make any difference what your age is. If a child curses his father and mother, the law is he shall be put to death. You don't say he's a minor. No more than you say about poisonous spider, or snake, or any creature that you destroy. Oh, he's just a little baby, you know, just a teenage, minor. There's no such a thing. You see, you destroy it. And so is the law of God. It's not compromising. So he says, curse is the one who does not confirm all the words of this law, and all the people shall say, Amen. That's in accordance with the command of God. And so anytime we, in essence, break the law of God, we're under the curse. What is the curse? Death penalty or punishment or whatever, you know, God decides based on the infraction or transgression to impose on us. You see? So in essence, that's what James is saying. You're always under a curse as soon as you break a law. You see? Every time you break the law of gravity, you're under a curse. Why? You're going to pay the penalty. And the law of gravity is not going to say, oh, wait a minute, this is just a baby. You see? Or it's just a minor. It doesn't make sense. You see, we are, you know, human beings are insane. Why not sane people? We invent our own righteousness, our own criteria for what is right, what is wrong. And we are totally oblivious to God and to his nature and to the law of nature. You see? That doesn't function like that. And so that's what he's saying here. Whoever shall keep the whole law, in verse 10, and yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. Now if you do not commit adultery, but you do murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. And when you are a transgressor of the law, you are under a curse. It's as simple as that. You pay the penalty. You know, you eat poison mushroom, doesn't make any difference how old you are, you pay the penalty. You see, that's reality. There's no such a thing as minor at that point, or a child, or a baby, or an adult. Doesn't make any difference. That's not the issue, how old you are. The issue is, what did you do? And if what you did was contrary to the law of God, you pay the penalty. As simple as that. The soul that sins, regardless of how old it is, it shall die. That's the law of God. As God told Ezekiel, chapter 20. And so he said, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. That's how we're going to be judged. So if the law is done away with, nailed to the cross, what is it to judge us with? Why is it that the law of liberty is judging us if it's done away with? Well, obviously, it's not done away with. You see, it's just the sanity of people was done away with. That's what the problem is. Because the devil deceives the whole world because the people follow the great whore and the harlots that made the whole world drunk with the wine of the wrath of her fornications. You see, so they're insane. When you're drunk, you're drunk. You don't know what you're doing. And so you come up with this kind of garbage that, you know, people call theology. And so James is saying, you do those kind of things because you're going to be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. As Christ said it earlier, you show no mercy to people, God will not show you mercy in the day of judgment. Or even while you are alive, you are in need, you are in trouble, you need help. You say you plead with God for mercy, he's not going to give it to you. Because you need to learn, having a taste of your own medicine, that you are supposed to have mercy. You see, that's the nature of God. That's the law of God. The law commands that you show mercy. As you said to the Pharisees, you know, you mind yourself about the little picky things of the law, which are important. God is the one that decided those things. So they're not picky in the sense of, the idiom that we use. Every law of God is important. But, you know, even the tithing, the issue was not the tithing, but, you know, they were so particular about it that even the little, tiny little things in life, you know, that they had to tithe on, the cumin and things like that, they were very particular about it because they wanted to be blameless as far as the law is concerned, not to be transgressors of anything, even the little ones. So, that was good. And he told them, continue to do so. But don't forget the weightier matters of the law. You see? And mercy was one of them. And faith. You see? And justice. And so, that's a part of the law. You cannot break this law. And a lot of people, because of the kind of upbringing they had, they are just merciless people, especially perfectionists. They're merciless people. They have no mercy on others. They're perfectionists, you see. And so, they ride very hard on them and on themselves. They're not even merciful to themselves. And that's not a godly quality. That's a demonic quality to behave in that manner, and people don't realize it. That's not the nature of God. You want to develop the nature of God, be like God, be in his kingdom, you better shed off this kind of an attitude and develop the nature of mercy, patient with people. You see, long-suffering. Be willing to accept, you know, the shortcomings of people and help them along the way. Don't demand perfection just overnight. You see, and perfectionists are that way. They are extremely intolerant of themselves and of others when they just didn't do it right. And, they get uptight and they get upset and make people angry and nobody's happy and things like that. It says, you show no mercy either to yourself or to others. When you need mercy, you will not have it. As simple as that. He says, mercy triumphs over judgment. So when you pass judgment in any given thing, big, small, about yourself, about others, let mercy triumph, because it has a purpose. You see? Verse 14, what does it profit? He says, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but does not have works. As some people say to this very day, in their ignorance, because they have an agenda, they hate the law of God, and they say, oh, we're not interested in works, we just want faith, we're going to live by faith, as Martin Luther taught that theology of demonism. That's what it is. It didn't come from God, but from other spirits, you see. Well, we live by faith alone. Where did you read that in the Bible, that you are to live by faith alone? Where Paul, as we read in Timothy, repeatedly talked about works, 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 good works. Not bad ones, obviously, good works. Where did he get it from? Well, he got it from him, and got it from his father, the devil, not from God. He's a person that tries to convince us, well, just take it easy, you know. Because when you're lazy, when you do nothing, when you're not busy, as some people would say, that's the devil's workshop. And so he's going to convince you, you know, take the easy road, you see, take the low road, not the high road, not the straight path, not the narrow path, you see. Well, then people choose it rather than walk behind God, and that road is not always easy. It was not meant to be easy. That's how you develop muscles. And so people would rather choose the way of the devil than the way of God. That's what he's saying. So you say, well, okay, I have faith. So what? You have faith. What does that mean? But you don't have works. You do nothing about it. You know, just like you look in the mirror, you see something wrong there and do nothing about it. Can faith, he said, save him? Not in accordance with the law of God or the will of God. Faith cannot save you. Now, if you have works and no faith, that cannot save you either. You've got to have both. And then even when you have both, it is God who will bring you the deliverance, not you, not your works, not your faith. You see, so you have to understand the entirety of the package deal there. You've got to have the totality to be perfect, complete like God. And the law of God teaches us how to be like God. You see, the law of God is perfect. It is complete. It has all the components in it to make you perfect, to convert the soul from what we are, from what the world has done to us, from what the devil has done to us, to what God is. And so we need the totality of it, both faith and works. And that's what he's saying here. Faith cannot save you. If that's all you have no works. For if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, you know, God is going to take care of you, don't worry, be happy, things like that. What kind of a faith is that? It's a useless faith, because faith without works is meaningless. You see? Well, Paul had to deal with the other side of the coin. If you just rely on yourself, I'm going to do it on my own, I don't need anybody to do it for me, that too is meaningless. You got to have faith in God, because ultimately speaking, He's the one that gives you breath and life. He sustains the world, you see. And if you don't have that kind of faith in Him, and you believe in Him and you trust in Him and you realize that all things come from Him anyway, so how can you do it on your own? You can't do it on your own. As Christ Himself said, of myself I can do nothing. You see? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Why? Because if God does not sustain us, we can do nothing. So whether it is by miracle, you know, that God does whatever He does, or just by the laws of nature that He set in motion that make life possible for us, we recognize that of ourselves we can do nothing. So we cannot go either way, either faith or only works. We have to do it both ways. That's God's way. And so, you know, He gives an example. Well, you know, you tell that person, oh, no big deal. So you're hungry, you know, God's going to take care of you. And you do not give them the things which are needed for the body. What does it profit? You see, what does your faith profit? Nothing. That's also, he said, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. A lot of people are dead. They have faith, but they're dead people. Because they have no works, they do nothing about it. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. So when you understand that you do what you do, as Paul said, I can do all things because of Christ who lives in me and strengthens me. You see? So he's very active. He does an awful lot of things. And as he said, you know, I work so hard, you know, harder than all of them. You know, the others, he put his whole being and heart in the work. He did a lot of works. Why? Because God gave him that faith and the strength and the help. So you see how the two all work together? Paul never taught against works in favor of faith, and James never taught against faith in favor of works. He's saying you got to have both. That's what he's saying here. Do them both, the works and the faith. So he says, you believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. In other words, just because you say, I have faith and believe in God, he says, so what? What does it mean? It means nothing. Demons do it too. So, if all you have is faith, what difference is there between you and a demon? Or the devil himself? They too have faith. They see God. They know God. None of them ever says, I don't believe in the existence of God. I'm an atheist. You see? all of them are full of faith in the reality of God. They know God. They know what He can do. They know what His law is. When the demons saw Jesus Christ, oftentimes, you know, they prostrated themselves before Him and they bowed down to Him and worshipped Him. What does that mean? They were followers of Christ? They worshipped God? They walked in His law? Of course not. So this is where it puts all those things, all those people who claim to live only by faith and they despise the law of God and the works of God. They are no different than demons. And that's what James is saying here. What difference is there between you and a demon if all you believe is in faith? You believe in God? Well, they believe in God and they tremble. You see, not only believe, they tremble. How many people tremble at the reality of God? Well, the demons do. But still, they're demons. You see, a lot of people still don't get this lesson. Because the devil is a master deceiver, and he makes you believe that he does not even exist. You've got to be a master deceiver to be able to do it. What a perfect alibi. You can commit any given crime and you convince people you don't even exist so they cannot put the blame on you. And he deceives the whole world that way. And so it says, do you want to know, O foolish man? That's in essence what you are. That's what he would say about Martin Luther, you know, the man that called James, in his, letter, the Book of Straw. He said, you're a foolish man. Don't you know that faith without works is dead? You see, that's the second time he says it. This is the brother of Jesus Christ who grew up with him from his youth, from the beginning of time. His older brother after Jesus Christ, of all the others that came from both Joseph and Mary. Of course, the great whore, calling itself the Catholic Church, Universal Church, the Mother Church, the Holy Mother Church, and all this garbage. And that's what it is, and dung and vomit in the sight of God, and the day is coming, they're not going to be playing these kind of games anymore. You see, they can play all the games they want, and the past, they didn't like what you said, they killed you, they butchered you, they massacred you, they martyred you, they burned you at the stake. So what? What did they gain by that? Those people are going to come back. From the dead, God will bring them back, and they're going to face those people. And where are they going to be at that point? You see? So it doesn't make any difference what they think, what they do. You cannot play games. And, they hate it. They hate the law of God. They hate the ways of God. And they teach all these lies and they believe all these lies and they continue to perpetuate that. So they deceive people. You don't need works. You just need faith. And then those that came out of them, the Protestants, they live in the same garbage, in the same line, the same vomit, the same dung. And they have in all those seminaries, as some people call cemeteries, where they teach all that garbage also. And people go for it. Why? Because, hey, it's easy. People like the easy way, push-button society. That's our nature. We'd rather be lazy than diligent. You see? Yet, that's not God's way. And so, he's giving the example of Abraham, and Paul gave the example of Abraham talking about the other side of the coin. Not contradicting, but just talking about the other side of the coin. Every coin has two sides, you see? He says, "Were not Abraham our father justified by works?" And Paul uses the same scripture by saying that Abraham was justified by faith. But he did not say that he didn't do anything. You see, he believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness, but he did what God told him. He obeyed. Whatever God told him, even to be willing to sacrifice his son, he was willing to do it all the way. That's works. And he did it because he had faith. And when you have faith in God, you are willing to obey any law. Any command, any instruction. It's when you don't have faith that you do not want to obey Him. And you turn around and deceive yourself that you have faith. No, you don't. That's the reason why you do not want to obey God and do good works. You have no faith. You're just kidding yourself that you do. Your faith is no different than that of the demons. And so it says, "Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar?" How many people are willing to do that? That's the ultimate work. That was a good work, not a bad one. You see, because God was just testing him, just wanted to see where his heart is all the way. And then he said, now I know. You see, because he went with him through the motions, through the emotions, through the feelings, through the struggle, and in the anguish that he went through. And he saw it all there. And he was marveling at it. You see, so he wanted to experience it. That's what he meant, now I know. It doesn't mean intellectually, academically, he didn't know it before that. He did know that. But he wanted to experience that with him. That's what it means to know. That's an intimate knowledge. That's beyond the facade of academic or intellectual knowledge. Some people read that statement, they don't understand what they're reading. And so he says, that's the way he was justified. He proved his faith by works. Do you see that faith was working together with his works? That's the point he's trying to make. And by works, faith was made perfect. So if you have faith but you do nothing about it, your faith is not perfect. It's imperfect. It's worthless. You see? Did you ever see a coin that has only one half? One side? There's no such a thing. You got to have both sides. One side faith, the other side is works. You put them together, you got a coin. Otherwise, you don't. It's all, you know, it's vain, meaningless. You know, try to circulate around, you know, $1,000 bill, $100 or $20 or $1 that has only one side. You see, the person has to be a moron to accept it. To say, oh, at least I, you know, you know, I got this $100 bill, you know, one side is there, so maybe I have only 50. You see, a person has to be a moron to go for it. And people are, spiritually speaking, when they go only for faith. You see? And do not understand, you got to have both. And so that's what he's saying here. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. The very statement that the Apostle Paul made, explaining the other side of the coin, not contradicting. There is no contradiction between these two. You see? And this James, the brother of Jesus Christ, who had known him from his youth, he not only knew what Christ was teaching, he knew Christ emotionally, you see, he knew him intimately, he knew him in every way, he knew what was his thoughts and emotions and feelings, and he was teaching all these things. And yet the great whore is claiming still to this very day to, in order to justify their own agenda, that is, their own vomit, their own doctrines that they have invented, demonic teachings, that Mary, not only she was a virgin, which she was, before she had sex with Joseph, you see, before, that is, Jesus Christ was born, obviously she was a virgin, though she was already his wife, legally speaking, because of engagement, that's the law of the Bible, you get engaged, you're already a wife, we know, without the consummation, and then you're fully a wife with a consummation or a husband. And they claim that, well, she never had children after that because she remained a virgin. There's no such a thing in the Bible. And then the one thing, you know, another step beyond it, she was born also through an immaculate conception, you see, so forth. All that is garbage, and people, you know, wallow in it, that mire, that filth and stench and pollution. And the day comes when God says he's going to open the eyes of these people, not only of Israel, and many of those who believe it are Israelites, they don't even know it. Then he said, you're going to loathe yourself for going for that kind of dung and wallowing in it and thinking that's the truth, and you think that you worship me with it. You see? Well, here it is, James. Who knows better? Half-brother of Jesus Christ. That's what he's saying here. He knows the entirety of the story. He was raised, you know, went to the same synagogue with Jesus Christ, talked to him, walked with him, learned a lot from him, even though he still had a hard time, until his eyes were open to understand the awesomeness of who his brother was. His very creator and God. And so this is what he's writing here. Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Why? Because he had only faith? No, because he had faith and works. That's the only kind of a friend that God wants. Not halfway, not half-baked. Not one that has only one side of the coin. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. That's the issue. It's not faith versus works, it's both. Or one half doesn't mean anything to God. There is no credit there. If you just do works and no faith, or if you just have faith and no works, you would get no credit. You get an F, so to speak. And he said that's the way it works. Likewise, was not Rahab, that gives another example, the harlot was also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way. Why did she do it? Because she believed the God of Israel. She knew what he did, and she believed it. And because she believed, he was willing to do something about it. That's when the works came. When you believe, you respond with works. If you do not respond, your faith is meaningless, worthless. A lot of people are out there, highly intelligent, great potential and do nothing with it, of what value is their intelligence? And of what value is your faith? Yeah, there is no work there. That's what James is explaining, and Paul is explaining it from the other side of the coin. So he says, for the as the body without the spirit is dead. You see, it takes the spirit that God placed in us, which is a spark of his own nature and character and his life, to make the body alive. When he breathed that breath, that spirit, ruach in Hebrew, and spirit are the same word, into the nostrils of Adam and Eve, you see, first with Adam, then he became a living soul. So when you die, the spirit goes back to God. You don't exist anymore, and he cannot, you know, be that pagan superstition. Well, you die, and then, you know, the inner you comes out, you know, the real you, and goes up to heaven, and, you know, plays on harp, and does all kind of things, and you can talk to that person. You see, that's idiocy, that's lunacy. God made it very plain. And even, you know, the science of man acknowledges that. When you're dead, you're dead. You don't exist anymore. You see, what happens after that? That's the playing of demons with people, making them believe that the departed is still alive. All those stories about ghosts and things like that, that's all you're talking about. Demons playing games with the minds of people. You see, because they know those guys, they know them inside and out. And so they can come and pretend like they are those people, and they talk to people and know their voice and tell you about their experiences, and people are taken by that and believe it. God made it very plain. A body without a spirit, the spirit that God places in us, is dead, does not exist. So faith without works is dead also. And that's the way it works. So here, he's talking about two doctrines. One is faith and works. The two have to be together, or else there is no real faith or works that is accepted to God. And the other one is talking about the pagan doctrine of heaven and hell. There is no such a thing. When you're dead, you're dead. You're gone. You don't exist anymore unless there is a resurrection. That means bringing back from the dead into life. So, two birds in one stone. The Apostle James is dealing with here. And the ignoramuses, obviously, they read that and it goes over their head. They don't understand what they've just read. They continue their own way. Chapter 3, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers. That's a problem. People that were not called by God, that are not inspired by God, that do not know the Word of God, that do not know the law of God, they have their own agenda, and they appoint themselves teachers. And they don't know what they're saying. And then they go deceive others, and people follow them. Why? Because they've got charisma. You know, they are able to eloquently talk about this and that and the other thing. And oftentimes, demonic spirits influence them and affect them and use them to create religions and philosophies and theologies and get people follow them and things like that. And people look at them and they idolize them and worship them. They worship men and not God. So James is warning people, don't fall for that, because the devil injects these kind of attitudes into the hearts of people and they think it came from God. So he says, brethren, do not let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. Who wants that? Well, people don't think about the stricter judgment because they don't. They think only about the glamour and the glory of being a teacher. Not realizing. You're in the limelight. God puts you on the stage. Everybody looks at you. And every word that proceeded out of your mouth is going to be there to judge you at the end days. And obviously, he knows the people that he inspires are not, you know, perfect. They make mistakes. So that's not what he's talking about. But he's talking about the self-exalted people that are going to teach a lot of lies and deceive many. Because in his days, and the days of the Apostle Paul, and that whole century, there were already a lot of grievous wolves coming from within and without, deceiving people, you see. And they were telling them, oh, you don't need to do works. You know, the law is done away with. Christ did it for you. Just live by faith. That mystery of iniquity, as Paul called it, was beginning in his days, where people came and started deceiving them, and it came on both sides. From the Jewish community, there were those rebel rousers that did not fully comprehend, understand the knowledge of God, the law of God. They thought about, hey, we can do it on our own, so they began to preach that and deceive people. Forget about faith, forget about Christ, you know, you just do it with your own hands, you see. Do it on your own. You don't need faith, you see. Just do it. By own deeds, you know, you're going to earn your own salvation. And then on the other hand, the Gentiles, they were not interested in that, generally speaking, you see, because people would rather go for the easy way. And they were coming from the other side, saying, well, forget about works, we just live by faith. And so James says, hold it down. Don't be many masters, don't be many teachers. Because if you're a genuine teacher of God, you'll teach the entirety of the counsel of God, the totality of it. You see, you're not going to be a deceiver. And then in that, you're not going to have the stricter judgment. You know, a little mistakes here and there, that's, you know, God is going to be merciful with that and take care of that. So you don't need to live in fear, you see, because you're a teacher and you made some mistakes here and there. You see, the major path that you're walking in, is it righteousness? That's what counts in the sight of God. As for the others, it would help us to see, you know, the little points here and there and the blind spots that we all have, you see. And oftentimes, you know, we cannot see them, obviously, and then others can see them. So what, you know? If you walk in the righteous path, if you walk in the righteous way, God will take care of the other things. And when the time comes, He opens your eyes and you see them, and then you repent and you go on and you continue to walk in the righteous path, you see. So you have to understand exactly what He's talking about, not go from one extreme to the other. So He says, do not become any teachers. In other words, don't make yourself a teacher, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. All of us, He says, make mistakes. All of us. Didn't exclude Himself. And certainly all the apostles deceived the brethren for decades about this point of Christ coming in their day. And many people made decisions based on that. And then many fell away because, you know, nothing happened. Now they, you know, their idols crumbled in front of them. And they said, well, I can't believe, you know, the apostles about this matter. You know, how can I believe them about other matters? How do I know? You see? And so we have to understand, even though the apostles made a mistake in this area, they generally, you know, taught the law of God, the entirety of it, the will of God. You see, the faith of Christ, the faith of God, they were not remiss at that. They did not lead, you know, the brethren astray in those areas, what really counts. But, you know, they had some blind spots here and there. That's what he's talking about here. And God is merciful. So he says, we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man. And we are not perfect. Able to bridle the whole body. We don't have that yet. We're working toward that goal until Christ is fully formed in us. It's a long life process. Doesn't happen, you know, when we begin or in the middle or even toward the end. Even when we die, totally serving God, even in martyrdom, there are still, you know, some blind spots that we have, and Christ is going to open our eyes and we'll say, oops, we're sorry, you know, obviously we did not intend to go in that direction. But, you know, generally speaking, the road we were taking was a righteous road, and we were going toward God, not away from Him, not doing our own thing. And so that's what he's saying here. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body with that. Look also at sheep. Also, they are not so large and are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires, you know. The captain. Even so, he says, the tongue. Now, so I switch into something else that has to do with teachers who do their own thing. Even so, the tongue is a little member that boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And that's what a deception can do. When you begin to deceive people, that deception grows and grows and grows, because now you begin to take them the wrong way. You see? And when you read the preceding chapter, you understand more or less what he's talking about. You see, the deception of work and faith and many other things like that that went with it. You depart away from God, you go the other way, you go into a deeper and deeper darkness, and just like the tongue, you know. But once you use your tongue to begin to lie and deceive, it gets worse and worse. And so, he says, look, what kind of a fire it can create. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. Now, speaking about the tongue that speaks iniquity, not the one that speaks righteousness, not the one that seeks the law of God wholeheartedly, may not know everything, may have some blind spots, but generally speaking, wholeheartedly seeking God. You see, this tongue is not going to set the whole world on fire in the wrong way. So he says the tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body. That's assuming we disobey the law of God.
and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. You see, what has been set on fire by hell? You know, if you have the pagan, you know, concept, you know, you go to hell, that means, you know, a place where you're going to burn forever and ever and ever. Then, you know, you inject your own idea into that. You see? But the word hell, obviously James is not speaking English, he's not using this word. He's talking about the word that was known at the time, Gehenna. Gehenna fire. What is Gehenna? Gehinnom. You see, the valley of Hinnom. There was a man called Hinnom. And then his sons owned that valley, and that valley was called the valley of the sons of Hinnom. That was called Gehenna. And into that valley, they threw all the garbage. And when they hanged a criminal, when somebody was put to death, they threw him over there too. They all got burned. And then, that's it, gone. Just like trash. You see, that's what he's talking about. Because the end result is, as God said, those people who insist on walking in wickedness, he's going to take them just like trash. He's going to throw them into a fire, and they're going to be consumed and become ashes, exist no more. That's what you read in Malachi. That's what the nature of hell that God talks about, not, you know, the pagan concept of it or the demonic concept of it that people believe in every given religion, unfortunately. For every kind of beast and bird of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Well, we do all those kind of great things. People go to the moon, and they come down and have a fight with their wife. Why? Because they couldn't control their tongue. Instead of being a tongue that has kindness in it, righteousness and truth and light and mercy and compassion, they use it to do evil. So we have a choice. We can use it this way or that way. So he says, but no man can tame the tongue. No man. That's period. No man. We all make mistakes. Slip of the tongue, so to speak. Christ never did it once. Not once. Did he ever have a slip of the tongue? You see, it was totally perfect because it did not have this attitude of compromising with, let's say, now, well, it's not that important for salvation laws. You see, that's not the kind of relationship he had with his father. He perfectly served him wholeheartedly and respected him and honored him and reverenced him and obeyed every command that he gave him. You see, that he himself gave to Israel earlier, and he lived it. That's why he could say, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the light. There is no darkness in it. And so he says, no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless God, and people do that, and Father, you see, and with it we curse men. Why? Well, because we really don't fear God, don't obey God, don't love God, because if we love him, we love his children. Oh, you know, we can get angry with people. God gets angry with us too. But it's not hatred, it's not malice, you know, in the wrong way. It's not because, you know, the God on our nerves or things like that, you see. So it says, you know, we use the tongue, the same tongue, you know, to bless God and to curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Now that's an oxymoron behavior. You can on one hand stand there and bless God and then turn around and curse his creation. Yet people do it all the time. Out of the same mouth, he said, proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Can't behave like that. That's lawless. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. That's contrary to nature, contrary to the law of God. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct, good works, that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom, the wisdom of God, not that of men. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, which is contrary to the law of God, you see, do not boast and lie against the truth. In other words, if you do all these kind of things, and then on the other hand you claim to be a God's servant, you know, you love God, you're the servant of God, God speaks to you, you pray to him, he talks to you, and things like that, you're deceiving yourself, you're lying to yourself and to others. You cannot mock God. He sees all things. And all those things are recorded. And the day is coming when everybody's going to know it. What went through your heart all this time while you pretended to be somebody else and something else. Can't play games with God. Might as well, you know, learn to walk naked before God at all times and with all men. Naked, you know, in other words, don't hide, you know, don't pretend to be what you are not. You know, be transparent, as people would say. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom, he said, that kind of thinking, that kind of behavior does not descend from above. That's what politics is all about. That's what commercialism is all about. Telling you something while they deceive you, meaning something else. You see? That's how they get elected. That's how it works in men. That's how they do it in business. That's how they do it in religion. Many places. We function like that. Because we're all, to one degree or the other, still of the devil. That nature is still in us. We haven't got rid of it yet. We haven't learned to be like little children. You know, they just say it like it is. Innocent, pure and clean. They haven't learned to have guile and deceitfulness in their minds and hearts. You see? And yet, we grew older and we learned to be just the opposite. We learned the ways of the devil instead of the ways of God. That's what God commanded us, to teach our children from a very young age to be like God, to think like Him, to walk in His laws, to walk in His teachings, to have His mind, nature, and character, not let the devil take advantage of them and take hold of them and warp and pervert them like he did with us. And we'll stop again at this point. This is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.